Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Grace Hobian, and I'm your host on this episode of the DIGA podcast. I talk with Dr. Laura Gardner. As of this recording, she's a recent graduate of the dermatology residency program at Vanderbilt University, a current attending dermatologist at Emory University, and a soon-to-be DermPath fellow at Brown University. We have an amazing discussion on biomedical engineering and innovation as it applies to dermatology and DermPath, and her tips for medical students on getting into dermatology residency, how to determine if you have an interest in DermPath, and things to consider if you'd like to do a DermPath fellowship, and much more. Without further ado, see you on the skin side. All right, everyone, welcome back to the DIGA podcast. I'm here with Dr. Laura Gardner, and she's going to introduce herself.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Grace. Yes, I am a dermatologist. I just graduated residency this year, so that's really exciting. I'm originally from Utah, and I got my bachelor's degree at Utah State University in biochemistry. And then I went to medical school in Salt Lake City at the University of Utah and loved my medical school experience there. And while there, I also got a master's degree in bioengineering. And then I matched into dermatology at Vanderbilt University. And so I was there for the last 3 years and just graduated. And my plan is to do a dermatopathology fellowship, which is going to be at Brown University, and it actually starts next year in July 2024, since I was a little bit behind on the application because I wasn't sure I wanted to do it yet. So currently, I am a dermatologist at Emory for this year before I do my fellowship.
You mentioned that you studied biomedical engineering while you were in medical school. What led you to sort of pursue that side gig during med school?
Yeah, well, I was really lucky in that the University of Utah actually has a specialized engineering track that's marketed to medical students and physicians. So I had heard about it just by being in medical school there, but I wasn't really sure how it could benefit me. And so I remember I was at some sort of like networking event and met this ophthalmologist who was like involved in that BioInnovate bioengineering program. And she was telling me about this novel drug delivery system for the eye that she had invented and had like a company born out of her idea. And so she was actually able to articulate to me that the bioengineering program would benefit any doctor in any specialty, because it really trains you in a different way of thinking that medical school doesn't really train you in. And so I found that really alluring because she said it can benefit patients and patient care and kind of help move the field of medicine forward in whatever field you're in. And so I really didn't think I could pass up the opportunity while I was there just because it was so unique and seemed to be so beneficial.
That's awesome. That's, you know, when you think about the different medical devices that are used throughout any field, it makes me think like an engineer was involved at some point. And so I think it's important for physicians to at least have a little bit of some type of understanding about what goes into that so they know how best to take care of their patients with these types of technologies. What would you say were some of your most impactful experiences during this innovation and engineering program?
Oh, yeah. Wow. I loved the program. I got to meet a lot of people I never would have met medical school alone. So I was interacting with a lot of engineers mostly, and then a lot of business people, and just like being in that environment and the way that they think being different from what I was used to was really, really important for me. And I was on an all-women team of engineers, which was super fun. And so kind of like the highlight was at the end of the year, we showcased our technology at the state's medical device competition, and we ended up winning the runner-up prize. And so that was really fun with like the culmination of all our hard work to get that prize. And we also won the Global Health Prize for a side project that we worked on, which basically was like how to standardize visual inspection of the cervix with acetic acid globally as a screening for cervical cancer. And so we got that prize too. And so I think just like in the end, like being able to identify that need and seeing it come to fruition and being there with my team and like being awarded for that was really, really fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congrats. What was the project that you won runner-up for? Was that the same as the cervix project?
It was in a similar topic, but not the same project. So that one, our main project was actually on a videoscopic vaginal speculum technology device that was reusable. We really wanted to delve into women's health and women's needs, just because our team was all women. And so that's how those two projects kind of like came to light.
Yeah, that's amazing. By chance, were you interested in OBGYN at one point or?
I wasn't actually. No, I wasn't.
Okay.
Which was also kind of fun because like it did put me into that clinical field for this project. And it wasn't like I knew I wasn't going to go into OBGYN, but that kind of made it fun too, because you got to like see another field and that's different than what you're going to go into and interact with those people too. So it was just like fun that I got to interact with people in, you know, medicine that I wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, that is really cool. Just getting that unique learning opportunity that you might not necessarily get again and just making the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go back to bioengineering in a bit here, but what led you to choose to pursue a career in dermatology? How did you know that derm was right for you?
Yeah, well, derm is luckily perfect for me for several reasons. It's very challenging and I can get bored easily. So I like that it kind of keeps me on my toes constantly. And it allows me to see a wide range of pathologies. So, I mean, it's just extensive. Like I'm seeing infectious disease, malignancy, autoimmune, autoinflammatory processes, allergic disease, inherited disorders of the skin, occupational exposures, photobiology. I mean, there's a wide range of pathology, which I like. But what I truly think stands out is that it's a field of making the diagnosis. And I love making the diagnosis. And so if you like patients to come to you already diagnosed or worked up, then dermatology like might not be for you. So that's one of the main things about it that I love. And of course, I also love the variation in seeing all age ranges and being able to do procedures. I've always liked pediatric medicine. And so I think it's fun that I get to see kids too.
Yeah, the variety really is just one of the big drawing points for me as well. Was there a particular point in medical school that you decided on derm, any particular experience or a moment where you decided, yes, this is for me? Or did you even think about it before starting medical school?
Yeah. Well, first of all, going to medical school was kind of like a really big deal for me. I grew up in a small community where I only knew one woman who was a physician, and I was considering going to pharmacy school initially and not going to medical school at all, really. But I eventually chose medicine, and I think I was one of three women at my university in the pre-med program. So yeah, I went to medical school knowing I liked medicine, but not really knowing which specialty would be a good fit for me. I had done some shadowing in pediatrics and really liked, you know, the kids and taking care of kids. So I kind of had an idea that perhaps I'd do some sort of pediatric subspecialty. But I knew I was interested in dermatology by the end of my first year after I went with a dermatologist to his clinic. And really, like, it just was so fascinating and intriguing to me because it was just like, how does he know what this is? Just like without doing any like tests or just like looking at it. And his patients just loved him and were so grateful for him. And he just was really enthusiastic about dermatology. And so that kind of sparked my interest and made it so I wanted to keep shadowing in dermatology.
Yeah, I felt like I had pretty similar experiences myself shadowing in the derm clinics and just being drawn to all of the things that you had mentioned. You had also talked about being interested in pediatric subspecialties. Were there any other specialties that might have swayed your interest as you were going through training in medical school?
Yeah. So exactly. So pediatrics was definitely in the front of my mind when I started, and I enrolled in this special course that my medical school had in advanced pediatrics. That was kind of like an evening elective over a couple years. And that was really fun. And I stuck with it even after I kind of realized I wasn't just going to go into a pediatric residency. But like I said, I like that dermatology allows me to see all ages still. But I also really enjoyed my core surgery rotation. And I was considering general surgery or ENT. Honestly, though, I couldn't get past just, I mean, there was a lot, but just, I can't wake up early to round. Like,
yeah.
You just have to like accept that about yourself. And it just like wasn't, I just couldn't imagine doing that forever. I couldn't hack it. Surgeons are like on another level. But the OR is amazing and everything, but getting to do office-based surgeries as a dermatologist is really fun for me. So, I mean, I really get to keep some of that I liked about that specialty.
Yeah, absolutely. I also feel similarly about that. When I was going through my surgery rotations, I liked surge onc, I liked plastics, I liked ortho. And, you know, I felt the same way about having to get up super early and then stay super late. And then how do you get 8 hours of sleep at that point?
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely someone that, like, you know, I need the sleep.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And the cool thing is, as a dermatologist, you get to make the diagnosis and you get to do the surgery, which is cool. And you'll get that in some specialties, but not all. So
agree. It's huge.
And when you were going through the process of applying to residency programs and figuring out which ones you wanted to apply to, did your background in biomedical engineering factor into your decisions on where to apply, or what factors did factor in?
Yeah, that's a good question. It really didn't in the end. It was definitely a topic of conversation in my interviews. Like, people were interested in kind of knowing what I had to say about it or why I did it. Interestingly, most programs had a hard time grasping like what my engineering degree or skills could mean for dermatology, at least in residency, and they weren't really sure how to support me in that way. It's just that most physicians, like we were saying earlier, especially those within dermatology, aren't exposed to like design thinking or technology development. And so it's kind of like, they were kind of like, I haven't really heard of this before. Can you explain it? I'm not really sure what this means. That's not true for all the programs. If you're looking for a derm program that's more like innovative focused or engineering centered, there are some programs that you could consider. For example, like my home program, University of Utah, they just have that culture of innovation, especially like even in the derm department, they develop new ideas and know how to kind of like bring that forward. And so that would be a good option for someone. But I kind of knew that I wanted to step outside of my alma mater for my residency, so I didn't decide to stay. But that's a good option. I know like Harvard is where, of course, CoolSculpting lasers were invented, where the Magic Wand Initiative was created, could be a good option. I had a good conversation at University of Rochester, actually. They actually developed Visual DX and like ASA, which is like the AI app for derm there. And so they kind of were more familiar with the process and were fun to talk to during my interviews. And then UPMC, just like as an institution, has a good culture of innovation. So, I mean, I think if that really matters to you, those are kind of some programs that you should consider more highly. But for me, it was more like I knew that my most important thing for choosing a residency program was to get the best training in dermatology. And so that was kind of my top priority, knowing that I could maybe do some innovation on the side or after I finished residency.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for sharing about like those programs that have some sort of an innovation focus. That's really helpful. I happen to be an alumna of the University of Pittsburgh, and I knew that their medical school has a biomedical engineering and innovation track as well that's been there for several years. At my school, it only started this year. I'm like the guinea pig class for it. So,
oh, very cool. Okay. And yeah. You're at Ohio State.
Yes, that's right.
Great. Okay, yeah, it's always good to add more programs to the list. I'm glad that it's kind of like catching on too in medical schools.
Yeah, what I've noticed too is like going through my engineering classes, of course, there's a lot of talk about the applications of bioengineering to surgical fields. And that's why I even considered plastics and ortho and whatnot.
Yes.
But there was not much discussion on dermatology. I sort of had to dig for information of how bioengineering could be applied to derm. I'm wondering, based on your experience in derm residency, if you've noticed any unmet needs that could be addressed with bioengineering, or if you yourself have attempted to create innovative solutions to any unmet needs that you've run into.
Yeah, of course. And just like echoing what you said, I mean, the surgeons are like light years ahead of, like, they, it's just, it's almost like not only do they like attract people with engineering backgrounds to their field, but it's almost like people with those backgrounds are attracted to them. I don't know if what cause and effect it is, but they definitely are like a very innovative group. And I think dermatology has a lot to learn from, you know, surgical fields and surgical subspecialties in terms of innovation. So I've always looked up to them and their, you know, them just like intrinsically valuing the innovative process a little bit more than other fields. So yeah, back to your question about unmet needs. So my favorite part of the design process is identifying unmet needs. To me, it's the most important part. So like, if you don't identify the correct need, everything after that could be time, money wasted. You could end up with a product that's not really what you wanted. And so you have to take the needs finding aspect very seriously, in my opinion. And I always like to start with observation. So it sounds like basic, but you really want to observe as like an unbiased outsider in a situation. And so just watching things as they are, noticing everything, like, you know, okay, the nurse just left the room twice. Like, why did that happen? Just, you know, write that down. The patient looks uncomfortable, you know, write that down. The procedure took 2 attempts to get it right, you know, write that down. And so you're just like observing things as they are. And this takes some practice, but you start to see like patterns and pain points in so doing. And so the next important thing with needs finding, I think, is basically gathering data from all your stakeholders involved. So usually there's your obvious stakeholders. So, you know, clinicians and then patients, and that's fairly obvious and intuitive. But then there are a lot of hidden stakeholders that you want to kind of get information from them and their perspective. So for example, like administration or insurance payers, patients, caregivers, et cetera. So you want to like parse out what are the pain points from each stakeholder, essentially. And that kind of helps you focus on where the need really is. And I could talk about needs finding all day, so I'm going to spare you guys the needs finding lecture. But it's really fun and it's really important. And I think, like, for me, just I see needs all day at work. You can just look around the derm clinic and you'll see like patients can barely get the gowns on, and then they like put on wrong, and then you're trying to examine them around the gowns and it's like a nightmare, and then they like put their arm in the wrong hole, and you know, like, that's a problem. Or like patients with disabilities have a hard time using phototherapy. Like, they can't fit in there, they can't bring their wheelchair in there, they can't stand. Or like, I mean, we still struggle with treating warts, we struggle with treating nail dystrophy, we struggle with treating scarring hair loss, we struggle with hidradenitis, itch, which is one of my clinical interests. And so, I mean, there's access to derm care is a huge problem. Derm wait lists are 6 to 9 months out in, you know, most places. So, I mean, like, there's problems everywhere, and you just have to observe them and you'll see them. And all of those problems are essentially there to be innovated upon. And so that's why I think it's important that we have innovators in our field, so that we can keep moving the field of dermatology forward.
Right. It's it's important not to take a viewpoint that's kind of stagnant and just be like, everything seems to work just fine. You know, there's not much to improve.
And that's one of the things that, I mean, in my master's program, they taught us, hey, like, go ask the doctor, like, why did you do it like this? And if they say, oh, that's just how we always do it, like, that's a red flag. You know, that's a something you need to think about. Like, right. Why?
Absolutely. And another thing that I've noticed that I've done more recently, as far as needs finding, more recently when I've gone to conferences, they'll present, just as an example, I was actually at the Peds Derm Society meeting, and they were giving a presentation on nail surgeries, and they mentioned some things in their lecture where I was like, oh, I got to write that down, because like that right there is a pain point. Mm-hmm. And then during didactics at my home derm rotation, they were even talking about Mohs surgery for wheelchair bound patients. How do you best do that? Those are a few examples of things I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up, because I think going to conferences is another way to kind of identify pain points.
Absolutely. What would you say are some good approaches to start the process of developing solutions for the needs that you find?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, anyone can practice observing and writing down pain points. And I think that is an easy way to kind of get your engineering brain going. So definitely start there. And then, you know, if there's a need or a problem you've identified that you feel passionate about, I mean, that's the most important thing. And so if you feel passionate about it, you'll want to get help and input from other people and engineers. And so a great start is reaching out to your department's tech transfer office or innovation think tank and just kind of like getting their input and kind of just say, hey, what could be the next steps? Is there someone I can collaborate with this on and, you know, go from there? Because it's tough when you don't really know what your resources are or where to go. But that's why it's nice that most universities have like people for this. And so you'll just want to find your tech transfer office.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely harkens back to the idea of multidisciplinary teamwork. We do it all the time within medicine itself. And that's why biomedical engineering exists. There is that need for medical thinkers and engineering thinkers to come together and sort of bridge that gap.
Yeah. And you know, it's fun, like you kind of get stuck in your own world in medicine and, you know, maybe you get bored or a little bit burned out, but when you find like a project like this that you're passionate about and you're able to kind of like cross fields and go hang out with some engineers or business people about your project, it's really fun. And like, I feel like it's invigorating and it helps you like recenter yourself and just feel like you are contributing to your field in a different way.
It's such a huge sense of fulfillment for sure. And then you mentioned earlier the Magic Wand Initiative. Can you tell our listeners about what that is and how you got involved in it?
Yes. So Magic Wand Initiative, it's sort of kind of like a think tank that was started at Harvard by Lilith Garabian and Rox Anderson. And they started it in order to train dermatologists in needs finding, essentially. And so the premise of it was, if you had a magic wand you could wave around at work, what would you change? And so that's kind of how the name came about. But they do have a virtual magic wand initiative that is actually worldwide, which is really cool. And it encourages dermatology residents and attendings to kind of like apply to this program. And it's like a progressive lecture series on innovation. It's a year-long program. And they kind of divide you up into teams where your team identifies a need, you kind of like pitch that to the group, and then you kind of end up proposing solutions in the end. So it's one of those experiences that kind of like helps train you on how to have that engineering problem-solving mindset to identify your needs. And so, yeah, it was really fun. You get to meet a lot of cool people there. I mean, I had dermatologists from across the country in my group. And then we ended up meeting up at the AAD as a group, and kind of when it was in Boston, and we ended up like touring the photomedicine lab at Harvard, which was really fun. And we got to see like the initial laser prototypes. So yeah, so it's just, it's one of those things that I think is important because it helps train clinicians in innovation.
Yeah, that is such a cool experience. That must have been so cool just to see the first prototypes and see the facilities there.
Yeah, I was definitely nerding out. I was like taking pictures of everything.
Yeah, no, I would too, for sure. Was there a particular project that you worked on? And if so, what has come of it?
Yes. So my team ended up focusing on the problem of venous stasis dermatitis, which, you know, is a huge factor in patient morbidity and mortality and ends up spending, you know, millions of healthcare dollars every year. And so we essentially came up with a solution where there's like this certain fabric that is used in space. And we kind of came up with these new compression stockings that are easier to use with this like space fabric. Nothing really came of it. It was more of like a practical situation. But if any of us had wanted to pursue it further, I think Magic Wand would have been supportive in that and hooked us up with people who could help make it happen.
I hope that continues to progress forward, be it through Magic Wand or elsewhere. In addition to things like Magic Wand or programs that we had mentioned earlier, how else can medical students get involved with innovation in dermatology?
I would go to the Advancing Innovations in Dermatology website. So that is a program that basically focuses on innovative solutions in dermatology. And so they host conferences. So there's one that's in conjunction with the AAD every year. They do like an innovation summit and an innovation forum. And going to that is useful. You can network with people, kind of see what people are doing. They also have kind of like this externship program, which is super interesting. And you can kind of like apply to be an extern with like a biotech company, for example, and kind of just like go, you know, work on a project with them. So I would definitely go to that AID website and kind of just like poke around and see what's going on in the field there.
Yeah, if you have those links, I can put them in the show notes as well.
Great.
You mentioned earlier that one of the things that you love about derm is being able to diagnose things. And so with DermPath, you are basically doing the gold standard of diagnosis for derm conditions in general. What in particular led you to pursue a DermPath fellowship?
That's exactly why.
Okay. I answered the question myself.
So yeah, you got it. I love making a diagnosis. It's just like my favorite part of medicine. And it's funny because like looking back, like it all makes sense. Like I loved my ER rotation, like so much I loved it. And then like internal medicine, I was kind of like, this is kind of boring. I don't know. I don't like it. But it makes sense because in the ER, I was like, oh, I'm the first one here. Like I'm going to try to make the diagnosis. And that's really like why I liked it. So yeah, so in DermPath, making the diagnosis is the entire idea. So yeah, that's why I chose it. I find it similar to like a puzzle or brain teaser, but then extra nerdy because there's so much hidden data in the tissue that's like ripe for innovation. So I think it kind of hits my favorite parts of derm and then also encompasses like innovation.
Yeah, it's a brain teaser that helps patients kind of directly almost.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of innovation, what would you say are some applications of bioengineering and innovation in DermPath? Are there any needs that you've found?
So many. We're already seeing a shift in pathology to whole slide imaging, which is basically like where they digitize the slides in like a standardized way. And that has a lot of implications for like machine learning and AI in the field, which I think is super exciting. So I can't wait to see like where that goes. And it could really be a game changer for access to care as well globally. The field's always making advances, like in molecular pathology, tissue diagnostics, tissue prognostics. I've seen some interesting stuff on like mass spectrometry, tissue imaging recently. So I think there's a lot going on in DermPath innovation-wise, which is really exciting to me.
Yeah, it definitely goes well beyond microscopes and into other,
for sure.
Yeah, other modalities as well. And sort of starting to work backwards in your experiences with application processes, what were your experiences with the application process to DermPath fellowships? Is it similar at all to applying for derm residency, or were there some differences that you noticed?
Yeah, and this is an important question, Grace, because DermPath application process is so different. Like, if you don't know what it is, like, you're going to be a little bit lost, because I didn't know, and they don't use a match, and there's not like a lot of information online for you about the application process, or like, you know, there's not like stats like this many people match, and there's not like information like that to find. So it's definitely a little bit tricky. So basically what you have to do is decide you're going to go to DermPath early, because they want you to apply 2 years before you start your fellowship, which I think is a little bit crazy. So they essentially want you to decide by the end of your first year of dermatology residency, which I did not decide by then, because I just was like overwhelmed with, you know, trying to learn dermatology. I didn't really have time to like focus on DermPath as much at the time. So you do have to decide early. That being said, I did not, and I applied like a year late and I matched. So people did definitely do that. But if you have an inkling that you want to do dermatopathology and you're going to do a dermatology residency, definitely kind of like get started on that early, like as soon as you start your dermatology residency. So that's the first thing, is the timeline is a little bit wonky and it's hard to get information. You basically, to apply, have to physically go to every program's website and see what they want from you, and then email it all, or in some cases, which is insane, physically mail it. And then essentially what they do is they'll offer interviews on a rolling basis. So you could get an interview immediately or later, or there's not like a certain interview like date or deadline really. And then some programs also can offer you the spot on a rolling basis. So it could be that you get an interview after you submit an application, and then they like immediately offer you the spot the next day, and you have like a day to kind of decide if you want to accept it or not. So you don't really get to make a rank list. You just have to be ready to say yes or no to an offer for a position. So it's a little bit tricky and it's not perfect, but it is similar to dermatology in that it is a competitive field. So, you know, keep that in mind. And it's definitely a very small field. So just like with dermatology, who you have connections with matters and who you know matters. And I would say if you are thinking about it, start getting ready early.
Do you happen to know why the timeline seems to be early? Like why you have to decide a couple years before graduating derm residency?
I don't know for sure. It seems to me that, you know, kind of like the match kind of benefits applicants. And it seems like this process more so benefits the programs, because they can kind of say, like, I think what happened was they were all in kind of competition with each other for the best applicants. So they started like interviewing earlier and earlier than other programs to try to like snag someone early, and then eventually ended up being like 2 years early.
I see. What would be the best way for medical students to find out as early as possible whether they think that DermPath is the career for them? Say, like, what if they are on the fence about it?
Yeah, I think if you're interested in DermPath, or you think you might be, you should probably shadow in pathology for sure, or hopefully in dermatopathology if you can. And you'll also want to shadow in dermatology because you can get to the fellowship through a pathology residency, but you can also get to it through a dermatology residency. So you'll kind of have to decide which residency suits you better. And that's like the kind of like the starting branch point. For me, I didn't know I was interested in dermatopathology, so I just knew I liked dermatology. So that wasn't really something I had to consider. But, you know, the nice thing about doing dermatology, and I can't speak for pathology, obviously, but the nice thing about doing dermatology is that you can practice dermatology and also do dermatopathology. And so you can kind of like split your time, which I think is fun. And I think it's fun that you can clinically correlate with yourself if you're a dermatologist. So that's my perspective, but I definitely would shadow and kind of figure out which residency is best for you.
Yeah, so that is a pretty important branching point, deciding if you want to do a derm residency or a path residency. I would imagine at least 99.9% of the people listening to this podcast are for sure wanting to do a derm residency. And so would you sort of give them the same advice as far as like whether they want to do a derm path fellowship versus Mohs versus peds derm? Just try and shadow as early as possible in derm path to figure out if that's the route they want to go down.
And usually, I mean, like most programs, you're going to get exposed to derm path right off the bat because it's built into the curriculum. So that shouldn't be as much of an issue. Just more so like pay attention to it. Like it wasn't really on my radar until I was, you know, in it and learning derm path that I was like, oh, like this is kind of fun now that I have time to like think about this because I've been so busy learning derm. So it's more like pay attention to it early on, try to see if you like it, go with your dermatopathologist and read out slides early. Like for me, I wasn't scheduled to rotate with path sign out until my second year. And so I didn't really get to see like what it was like actually doing dermatopathology in practice. And so that would be something useful to do early on. And then if you know you want to do derm path before you match, it might be useful to rank highly programs that have a home dermatopathology program, just because there is some data that a lot of dermatopathology fellowships are more likely to match from their own residents.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've kind of noticed as well. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you did mention earlier about how as a derm residency trained derm pathologist, you can practice both clinical derm and derm path. In your future career, do you see yourself doing 50-50 between clinic and path?
I do think so. That's my plan for now. We'll kind of see where things take me. But I definitely, you know, love dermatology. So my plan is to do some dermatology clinic and then some derm path.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then continuing to work backwards in the sequence of applications, what advice do you have for medical students in their preclinical stages versus their clinical stages that are getting ready to prepare their CV so they can apply to the most competitive specialty, the most competitive non-OR specialty that exists?
Yeah. I gotta say, I definitely empathize with you guys, you listeners who are, you know, in the midst of this and applying to derm, just because it's gotten crazy with how competitive it is. And, you know, for me, like, I remember asking myself, like, do I really want to do this? Like, the pressure, there's so much pressure to do well and to do all the things. And it's just like, it's too much, you know, it's a lot. My advice would be to try to like stay true to yourself and stay in touch with your needs and your wants. And like, if you are passionate about dermatology, you will find a way to get there. And you should just let your passion shine through in your applications and everything you're doing. And don't try to get, you know, sucked into what everyone else is doing, because there's a lot of pressure and competition. And I think staying true to yourself and finding something you really care about is going to shine through in your application and your interview and is going to be valued by dermatology residencies. It's tough, but I think try to just stay in touch with yourself.
Right. It really is important to stay as happy as you can throughout the process and try to put blinders on and make sure they're not see-through blinders, you know, focus on the things that, yeah, focus on what makes you unique and what makes you special. And, you know, because it's really not worth it to burn out during this process.
Yeah, it's not worth it. And the thing is it's like, you work so hard to get to your derm residency, but you're going to have to, it's a lot. Derm residency is a lot, and you're going to have to work really hard there too. So you definitely don't want to like expend all the energy you have trying to get there and think, oh, like now I can relax, because it's just, it's not true. Like it's more work again, you know? So, So just keep that in mind. You want to make sure you're doing things that are in touch with your values and that you care about.
Yeah. It's all about grit.
Yeah.
And what would you say to your past self in medical school now that you've graduated derm residency?
Wow. I would say that dermatology is the right choice. So stick with it and it will pay off in the end. And definitely, I would say maybe shadow some derm path, because it would have been nice to know that earlier.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if possible, where can students reach you if they have additional questions?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. My handle is LJ Garden, just the first four letters of my last name, G-A-R-D-N. And so tweet me, message me on there. I'll see you on there.
Awesome. I'll add that to the show notes.
Amazing.
Dr. Gardner, thank you so much again for being on the DIGA podcast. I think this was such an insightful discussion just on everything from bioengineering and derm to what the process of getting into derm path is like, in addition to everything else. So thank you so much
for having me. I hope to see all the listeners at an AID meeting. And if you see me, come up and say hi.
By chance, are you going to the ASDP meeting this year?
I am not going, unfortunately.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe in a future meeting, I hope to meet you at some point.
Amazing. Yeah. If you see me and if I see you, I'll say hi.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.